Hey there, it's David L. Gray in the morning. After the news headlines, I have today's lead stories for you. UBI, Universal Basic Income, is coming. In a few years from now, the government will be paying you not to engage in the workforce. We need to talk about whether UBI is consistent with Catholic social teaching on human dignity and our call to labor. And later, I'm going to inspire you with a commentary on today's readings at Mass. I'm going to give you the real reason why King David committed adultery and how you may be committing the same mistake right now. And I hope that your next 30 minutes with me brings you lots of joy and lots of peace. Let's get started. This is David L. Gray in the morning, and here are your news headline sponsored by stdominicsmedia.com. Here's your daily briefing. I'm sponsored by them, stdominicsmedia.com, your source for books, podcasts, and free online theology and retreat courses geared to lead you into a deeper study, prayer, contemplative, and liturgical life so that you can live your life more confidently to be a saint. You can find them online at stdominicsmedia.com. Today is January 30th, 2026, the Friday of the third week of Ordinary Time. In today's readings, we continue in the second book of Samuel, where David's kingship takes a darker turn as he sins gravely against Uriah the Hittite, reminding us of the tragic consequences of disordered desire and a need to repentance. The psalm cries out, "Be merciful, Lord, for we have sinned," as David confronts the weight of his own actions. And in the Gospel from Mark, Jesus teaches about the mysterious growth of the kingdom of God, the seed that sprouts and grows, we know not how, and a mustard seed that becomes a great sheltering tree, revealing that God's grace works quietly, steadily, and often behind our sight. In world news, across the United States, tensions have reached a breaking point as activists call for a nationwide general strike today, known as National Shutdown Day, protesting the Department of Homeland Security and ICE operations following the fatal shootings of Renee Nicole Good and Alex Pretty earlier this month. Organizers are urging Americans to stay home from work, school, and commerce to create an economic blackout, and pressure the federal government to withdraw federal agents from communities. Protests and marches are planned across all 50 states and Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, the fallout from the Pretty shooting continues to deepen, with lawmakers from both parties demanding investigations and accountability. Civil society groups, student unions, and labor activists are coordinating demonstrations nationwide, calling the federal crackdown unconstitutional and dangerous. In Washington, the federal government faces a looming January 30 funding deadline, with Congress still deadlocked over the Department of Homeland Security appropriations bill. Senate Democrats have vowed to block any package that includes current DHS funding levels following the recent fatal shootings, raising the real possibility of a partial government shutdown by midnight. In international news, European foreign ministers have agreed to designate Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terrorist organization, escalating diplomatic pressure amid ongoing regional instability. In the United Kingdom, Prime Minister Keir Starmer met with Chinese President Xi Jinping to affirm a long-term strategic partnership between the two nations. In Catholic news, in Rome, Pope Leo XIV met with members of the Regnum Christi Federation, urging renewed clarity of vocation, servant leadership, and deeper communion across the apostolic movement. He also called on the Dicastery for the Doctrine of Faith to provide clear guidance amid rapidly changing global challenges. Cardinal Hollerich emphasized that peace in Europe, especially amid the ongoing war in Ukraine, requires personal conversion not merely political solutions. Leo XIV echoed this, calling for peace grounded in shared moral foundations. The Pope also reiterated the Church's commitment to dialogue over violence, calling for unarmed peace as global tensions rise. Across the United States, bishops are calling for a holy hour of prayer for the nation, inviting Catholics to seek guidance amid political unrest and social division. The saint of the day. Today, the church remembers Saint Martina of Rome, virgin and martyr. Martina, a young woman of noble birth who lived in the early 3rd century and gave her life rather than deny Christ. Under Emperor Alexander Servius, Martina was arrested, tortured, and pressured to renounce the faith. But every threat only strengthened her resolve. Ancient accounts say she faced her persecutors with a serenity that unsettled them, as if she already saw the victory beyond the suffering. A church still stands in Rome dedicated to her, St. Lucia Martina, near the Roman Forum, a reminder that empires rise and fall, but the witness of a single courageous Christian endures. Her life is a quiet challenge to us today. Would our love hold firm under pressure? And do we live with the same fearless clarity she showed at her death? St. Martina, pray for us. This has been your daily news briefing sponsored by stdominicsmedia.com. Please visit him online. And this is David L. Gray in the morning. I'll be right back with your lead story about the coming economic transformation that universal basic income is bringing and whether it aligns with the church's social teaching in Rerum Novarum. This is David L. Gray in the morning.
Hello, I am David O'Gray.
Hello,
I am
David O'Gray.
I am a Catholic
writing and speaking
and teaching courses.
You can find us at
stdominicsmedia.com.
My work centers on liturgical theology,
which is also the focus of my doctoral studies at the
Catholic University of America.
Welcome to my morning show.
It's here where I walk you through today's
top stories,
offer an uplifting reflection on the readings of Mass,
and introduce you to this.
We're here every weekday
at
6:45 a.m.
If this show enriches your day, I hope you come back.
I look forward to connecting with you.
Let's get into today's show.
All right, let's shift from the headlines into something far more unsettling. If the news wakes you up, this part should jolt you. It's like a siren, because the economic storm that's coming on the horizon isn't a drizzle, it's a full-out tsunami. There are serious analysts, not fringe bloggers or conspiracy theorists, who are warning that the next decade will bring job losses on a scale we have never seen. Let me name a few so you can look them up yourself. So first, we have Martin Ford. He's the author of The Rise of the Robots. He predicts that automation could eliminate 40 to 70% of existing jobs. 40 to 70%. Kai-Fung Lee, one of the world's leading AI investors and former president of Google China, warns that 40% of global jobs could disappear within the next 15 to 20 years. Elon Musk has repeatedly said that AI will make all jobs obsolete and that UBI will be necessary. We'll play a video of him talking about that coming up. Andrew Yang is another one. He built an entire presidential campaign on a warning that automation will wipe out millions of American jobs, especially trucking, retail, and clerical work. And of course, the famous Frey and Osborne study from Oxford estimated that 47%, nearly half of U.S. jobs are at risk of due to automation. So let's bring in Elon Musk so you can check him out in his video and see what he has to say about this subject as well.
There will be fewer and fewer jobs that a robot cannot do better.
Okay.
What to do about mass unemployment? This is going to be a massive social challenge. And I think ultimately we will have to have some kind of universal basic income. I don't think we're going to have a choice.
Universal basic income.
Universal basic income. I think it's going to be necessary.
So it means that unemployed people will be paid across the globe.
Yeah.
Because there is no job. Machine, robot is taking over.
That's simply and I want to be clear that these are not things that I think that I wish would happen. These are simply things that I think probably will happen. And if my assessment is correct and they probably will happen, then we need to say, what are we going to do about it? And I think some kind of a universal basic income is going to be necessary. Now the output of goods and services will be extremely high. So with automation, there will come abundance. There will be almost everything will get very cheap. I think we'll just end up doing universal basic income. It's going to be necessary. The harder challenge, much harder challenge, is how do people then have meaning? Like a lot of people, they derive their meaning from their employment. So if you don't have, if you're not needed, if there's not a need for your labor, what's the meaning? Do you have meaning? Do you feel useless? That's a much harder problem to deal with.
Yeah, so that's where I think Catholic theology comes in, because I think this is going to be a good help. So really, to summate what Elon Musk is saying, so because of automation, because of AI, everything that humans do, the machines are going to do it a lot better, a lot faster. So they're going to be producing a lot more volume than we could ever do. And because there's going to be more supply and less demand, then everything is going to be so cheap. And so this is really going to really crush the markets. It's going to destroy capitalism as we know it. And so human labor is going to be unneeded. Okay. And also there's going to be so much supply of things. There's going to be a transition point where there's going to be a period eventually where we won't need money. Okay, we won't need labor, we won't need jobs from human beings, because everything's going to be abundant. Machines are going to be doing everything, right? No, you will need people to pick apples, people to do accounting, people to make cars, truck drivers. Everything is going to be automated. So, so there's going to be a rough patch here as capitalism implodes. Okay. And we go to this economy where money is not needed. So to fill that gap is where universal basic income is needed, as UBI, where the government has to give people money to get them through this transition from capitalism into this thing. I don't know what we're going to call it, because it won't be socialism, it won't be communism. I don't know if there's a name yet for it, but it's going to be an existence where, you know, money's not needed. So that's where UBI comes in. And it's really going to be a really, really rough patch, because, again, capitalism is going to implode. You have about 5 years to build wealth, to own your home, to pay off your debt, right? That's on the aggressive end, I would say 5 years. Maybe it's 10 to 15. But it's coming in a lot of your lifetimes when if you don't have your stuff together, you don't own your home, you have debts, it's going to be a lot of people are going to want what you have or what you owe them, and they're going to come for it. And you know what that means. If you own have a house and you can't pay for your house because you don't have income, and the government hasn't reached the point where they're going to do these massive bailouts to bring people out of debt, then it's going to be rough. So I definitely advise that you pay off your debts, you buy land, you own the land, and you just secure yourself and your family, because it's this UBI in this new world where we don't need money is absolutely coming. So it's not a matter of if, it's like how soon. So all these analysts that we talked about, you know, none of them agree on the exact number or the exact date of, you know, when this is coming, but they all agree that it's coming, right? They agree that we're on a direction and we're winding down in this age of capitalism. So whether it's 40% or 50%, the pressure on the labor market is really is going to be systemic, right? And I think, and here's the kicker, I would say, companies are already laying off people in anticipation of this AI and automation that's coming. It's not even ready, but because executives believe it will be coming and soon, they're already preparing for it. So in the same way I say you need to prepare for what's coming, corporations already are. They're already making the cuts. They're already paying off the debt. They're already reducing their staff and their labor. So even the most extreme predictions, if they don't materialize, the economic disruption will be real and it will be massive. No question about it. And that's why universal basic income is not some fringe idea anymore. It's becoming practically necessary. Around the world, dozens of governments, nonprofits, and firms and other organizations are building digital identity structures and secure payment systems that will make UBI possible. So whether is going to be completely digital, where they're going to try to give you something on your phone or a chip in your hand or something like that, these systems are coming. And right here in the United States, we already have a UBI pilot programs that's running in at least 18 states with more than 50 active experience. California has a dozen alone. So UBI is here. So the question isn't if UBI is coming. Again, the question is whether it be local or national. And let's be honest, as much as it is starting off local, inevitably it will be a national plan. Unless you have massive wealth, you don't need anything, and the government hasn't taken things from you, you're going to be on UBI, okay? It's going to replace Social Security. If that time comes when UBI is on board and you're at the age of Social Security, forget about Social Security. It's going to transition to UBI. You're not going to get both. You're going to get one or the other. And when that day comes, you know, the patriarchy bros, you know, they want to keep their wife at home. They won't have to complain about women staying at home because they'll be at home with them. All right. Everyone will be at home. The entire structure of labor is going to change. So that means it's going to change family. It's going to change relationships. It's a whole new world that's coming. Now, before anyone starts shouting communism, like I said, let's go back to the church's foundational teaching and Ray Navarro. This is Mazza. Incredible document, prophetic at this point, I will say, is written by Leo the 13th in 1891. Because here's the truth, UBI, universal basic income, it's not communism, because communism, it abolishes property. UBI does not, as far as we know. So I'm making blanket statements here. We don't know how it's going to look in every country, but on principle, it doesn't abolish private property, right? Just sustains what you have. Communism denies the dignity of labor. UBI does not. UBI says, go do something else with your life. Here's some money to sustain you. So there's labor to do, but it won't be capitalism driven. So communism replaces the family with state. UBI does not. Of course, there's a danger here, right? So the government is just giving you money to sustain yourself, right? In a sense, there's a danger that people believe, oh, well, the government is all that I need, right? So government becomes a type of God, a type of father that provides for us. Okay, but here's where Ray of Navarro comes back in to help inform us and shape what that should look like. So what Ray of Navarro actually teaches is that the state has a duty to protect workers when economic forces threaten their dignity and survival. So Leo XIII, he insisted on a living wage and a right to private property and the moral necessity of ensuring that every person has the material foundation to live on in a way that's dignified. So UBI, if structured correctly, can be understood as a modern mechanism for fulfilling that duty. Okay, so it does provide a living wage. It does protect, it can protect private property, and it does set persons up to labor in a way. And in a moment, I'll talk about, okay, how do Catholics, how do we live our life in this new world with UBI? We'll talk about that, like what labor is possible. Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. But even in a world where traditional employment collapses, men and women will still labor, right? They will labor in new ways, right? So there's going to be creative work you'll be able to do. There's going to be caregiving, obviously, that's still needed. The building the community is going to be a lot closer when this comes. Education, there'll be labor there. And in the spiritual and intellectual life, there's labor there. There's going to be a lot more opportunity for religious life. Okay. So that's going to, I think, increase. People are going to be devote themselves to the spiritual life. You know, you look for religious orders to join. There's going to be plenty of labor and works of mercy. There'll still be sin in the world. Obviously, there'll still be prisons. So there's a lot of place. There's a lot of opportunities for ministry. There'll poverty, in a way, will still exist. Okay, so there's still room for works. People are still going to die. Okay, so there's labor. See, I think you see what I'm saying here. So capitalism is going to go away, but there'll still be room for labor and cultivation of the home. There's going to be labor for in the domestic church, labor in the church. Okay, so labor will not disappear. That's the point. The factories are going to disappear. The cubicles are going to disappear. The commute to work is going to disappear, but the human vocation to work and our first and principal vocation is first to know, love, serve God, to live a life in the Holy Spirit. And then there's our baptismal vocation. And then down the line, we have the the vocations of calling, such as marriage, holy orders, consecrated life. Okay. So there are still those vocations in which we still work, right? So how can a Catholic church prepare for the UBI world? That's an important question, because I think we have the answers to answer this. And the church has to right now be doing a lot better job getting on top of this. We need to have a lot more conversations. We need to have a lot more conferences, high levels, low levels, on a church level. There needs to be a whole synod on UBI, because it's right around the corner, and we don't know how to transition to it. It's going to affect the church dramatically. And but as, again, like I said, I think Ram Navarum does have the answer. So what do we do with all this? How do Catholics prepare for a world where UBI becomes not just possible, but necessary? Okay. So here are a couple of quotes from Leo XIII and Ram Navarum I want to read to you. So first he says, again, that the state has a duty to protect the community and its constituent parts. And in protecting the rights of the individual must have special regard for weak and the poor. Then he says the law should favor ownership, and its policy should be to induce as many as possible of the people to become owners. So here's what we do as Catholics, knowing this coming, you know, besides the things I already told you, pay off your debts, get some land, own that land. Okay. If you have children that are going to university now, right, they're going to be freshmen next year. And, you know, if they're paying themselves their way, I guess they can do what they want to do. But if you're paying for them to go to university and they're about to go in and get a degree and a job that clearly is not going to be there when they're going to get out of university in 4 or 5 years, why are you paying for that? All right. There are certain fields that people are still going to be needed. There are really fields in science, you know, computer related programming degrees. You know, if your child has an acumen for things like quantum physics, computer programming, Those are things where maybe some architecture in a way. There's still going to be some things that you need the human intellect and creativity for. But they're just some majors that are completely irrelevant. Accounting is one of them. You should not be starting an accounting degree next year. That's crazy. I can think about a few others, but no. If your child says, "Oh yeah, I want to go to school to be an accountant," unless they're like a cyborg, they should not be pursuing it. That's a waste of everyone's money, everyone's time. Okay. So, but you know, I digress. In addition to that, I would say first, we need to prepare the same way the church has always prepared for upheaval, with prudence, with stewardship, and with hope. So if the economic collapse is going to shift this dramatically by, say, 2033, then now is a time, not later, to get Catholics in their houses in order. So one, that means one, again, build wealth intentionally. Not in a spirit of fear, but in a spirit of stewardship. Okay. Know what's coming. Right? If they're going to push you on universal basic income, there's going to be this scary transition when capitalism collapses. And things become scarce for a while. You should be prepared for that. So I would say save aggressively. Liquidity. Is freedom when systems change. Whenever systems change, people who have liquid, and we've seen this in the 20s and early 30s in the Great Depression. If you were liquid, you were okay, But if you weren't, you had debt. You lost whatever you owed money on. So I would say buy land if you can. Land has always been, I think, the most stable form of security in times of transition. Again, pay off your debts. Imagine entering the 2030s without the chains of interest, without the treadmill of monthly payments. You'll be so universal basic income. You guys have debts. Universal basic income may not cover what you have. When I sold cars and I used to look at people's finances, I would be in tears sometimes. Why is this person buying $1,000 car? It's going to cost them $1,000 a month, right? And their debt to income ratio can't do it. Some people, it doesn't make any sense sometimes the financial situations people put themselves in, right? But I still sold a car. My job was to sell the car. I wasn't a financial advisor. Well, I'm still going to sell the damn car. But it's like, wow, why are they doing this? I'd be saying this to myself. But imagine, so you have $1,000 car payment, car you didn't put any money down or something like that, something just crazy, right? And universal basic income is only going to give you $1,200 a month, right? You're not going to make it. Right? So those type of financial decisions, you need to just stop making just immediately. And then the fifth thing I would say, strengthen your family's economic skills, strengthen the relationships and the community with your neighbors, your church community, right? It's going to be, it could go one or two ways, this transition when capitalism collapses. It can become a zombie apocalypse. There could be a bunch of ricks out here just popping people in the head and taking what you have. Breaking into your home, it could be snatch and take, or it could be we build community. Okay. It's going to go either way, all right, during this transition period. So, and really, here's the truth. If UBI becomes a national reality, the people who thrive are the ones who are not enslaved to debt, not dependent on consumerism, not spiritually hollowed. Okay. Out by the culture of perpetual work and debt. So, and here's a part that should actually, I think, excite Catholics. I'm saying here's, Catholics should be excited about this part. A world with UBI, if we approach it with virtue, if we approach it with virtue, could free us to pursue things that actually matter. UBI could be a beautiful thing. This new world could be a beautiful thing. Imagine a world where you could finally live the Beatitudes without the constant pressure of economic survival. Imagine that. You could just pursue Christ. Imagine that. Imagine a world where you could just cultivate the arts. Like you love the arts, you're an artist, you're a musician, you paint, you draw, you create, you build. Imagine a world where you could just do that. That's what you do throughout the day. Yes, you have labor. You wake up, you do your prayers, you go to daily mass. Yeah, you could go to daily mass now. And then the rest of your time you spend cultivating the arts. Yes, like I said, the patriarchy bros who want their wives to stay at home barefoot and make babies, you know, raise children, put socks on their feet. And you don't have to worry about that anymore. Everybody's home, right? Everybody's raising children. The community is more involved in raising children again, like it used to be, without anxiety of having to have two incomes, right? There's going to be one income for the family, okay? It's going to be probably a system where you have a household. You have a two-parent household. You have kids. And probably, the bigger your family is, the more UBI you have. That's just kind of how it's going to have to be. We could spend more time caring for the elderly. Move grandma in. Move parents in. You know, more UBI, right? We can move back to that environment. We can build a parish life, right? So you wake up. What does the parish need today? That could be something you do during the week. There's more time to live we have Dominican spirituality. As Dominicans, we believe that a life is built for study, prayer, contemplation. So that if we pray well, what if we study well? Well, we can more deeply contemplate the things that we studied. If we studied and we contemplated well, then we can more deeply pray that which we've studied and contemplated. And if we've done all three of those things well, pray, contemplate, study, then we can live a more richer and fuller life of service. All right. So imagine that life, just being like living the Dominican spirituality. You study, you pray, you serve, contemplate, right? Oh, you could also rediscover, your primary vocation. Yeah, you have your vocation as a baptized Christian, your vocation in marriage and parenthood. But yeah, your primary vocation, your first vocation is just to know, love, and serve God. That's what's in your heart. You'll have more time to do that without having to go to work 40 hours, 60 hours a week. So not because, the state replaces work, but because in the machines, but because the state removes the material desperation that often distorts the work-life balance. So this is the Rerum Novarum world I think Pope Leo XIII envisions, a world where economic structures, they actually support human dignity. They actually support family life in the pursuit of holiness. So so that's what I think is prophetic document, right? And we can live in that society with UBI after we get through the transition, if we get through it. So, yes, the coming decade is going to bring some disruption. It's not if, it's when. It's going to be the next 5 years, the next 20 years. The collapse is coming, right? This reset, this is going to be the great reset. It's going to be the great reset like there's never been a great reset. And I advise you to get prepared for it because it's coming. It's going to be a great collapse. But for Catholics, I think who prepare wisely, who shed the debt, who build stability, who anchor themselves in the gospel, they'll be fine. Right? It may also bring, again, a new opportunity to live the Christian life with a freedom our ancestors could only dream of. And that's the conversation we need to have, not just about the economics, but about vocation, virtue, and the future Catholic life in an automated world. So here we go. This is David L. Gray in the morning. I'll be right back with a commentary on today's readings of Mass. I'm going to play a quick commercial for you, and it relates to what we're talking about. In the next 5 years, how can you make more money to, you know, get out of the debt that you're in? Check this out.
Hey, you ever heard people say,
hey, you ever heard people say,
spend money to make money?
Spend money to make
money? With my Capital One Quick
Silver Card. With my Capital One Quick
Silver Card. That's exactly what happens.
That's exactly
what happens. Here's how I use it.
Here's
how I set my monthly budget aside.
And then I put everything I'm going to spend,
everything I'm going to spend,
bills, gas, groceries,
bills,
entertainment,
all entertainment.
And if I spend about $3,000 a month,
depending upon how much of that is travel,
I earn between $45 and $80 in cash back rewards.
That's real money.
That's real money.
Nothing extra.
And here's the best part.
I save all those rewards.
And I use them for Christmas.
That way I bless my family.
That way I bless my
family. A single dollar of my own cash.
Just rewards.
The Quicksilver.
The Quicksilver
Capital One
is,
I think, simply a smart way.
Simply
to make free money.
By doing what you already
do.
Get your card today. Tap on a QR code
today. Tap on a QR code below in the
description.
And when an application opens,
when an application opens,
you see my name.
You're in the right place. With your new
Quicksilver card.
Apply today.
Go
make some money.
What's in your wallet?
And let me get to a couple of comments before we get into today's readings. Brianna, my sister, she says that's a scary situation. People will lose a sense of purpose. Yeah. I didn't mention that. Because that's the reality. I think Elon Musk also he touched on that as well. Yeah. So imagine a world where capitalism collapses and you're a person who that was your identity, that your job was your identity. Okay. And that's gone now. So that's another piece of the transition. I think, you know, that's probably another vocation. Of course, military service, that's something that's automation is not there. In some things, soldiers and peacekeeping and things like that, that's obviously going to be a thing that people can do, but it'd be a type of service, right? And of course, it's going to be interesting because the payment for those services are going to be a lot different as well. So I think in doctors and physicians and medical care, those are good career fields to go into as well. But again, you know, if we're going to universal basic income, and inflation is going to be crazy, right? There's going to be a lot of supply, not much demand. You're going to have your very rich people, of course, and then you have your people in universal basic income, maybe some people in the middle as well. So it's going to be a transition where, you know, doctors and physicians, they're making a lot less in the future. And so we're going to move to this labor, this economy where what you do is truly your vocation, is truly your calling. And because you want an incentive to go into some of these fields, like being a physician and being a surgeon, it's not going to be money anymore. Okay. Because you're not, the money won't be there to pay you because capitalism has imploded. And Phil says something funny. He says political science was a waste of money in 79. Yeah. So if it was a waste of money in 79, and if you graduated with a poli sci degree in 2029, what are you going to do? So, yeah, don't let your kids do some of these majors. It's absolutely crazy in the world that we're moving in. But let's take a look at today's commentary. Today's readings at Mass for the third Sunday in Ordinary Time. So we have in our first reading, which we'll talk about, it comes from 2 Samuel, is David and Bathsheba. The response to Rosan is really a response to that. Be merciful, O Lord, for we have sinned. And the gospel reading is from Mark chapter 4. We're still in Mark, and 26 through 34. And we're in Mark, of course, because it's, you know, year A. Jesus said to year A of the daily readings, rather. And Jesus said to the crowds, this is how it is with the kingdom of God. So this is the parable of the mustard seed. You know, like the mustard seed is a seed that which is grown, sown in the ground, is the smallest of all seeds on earth. Not really true, is it? We've seen smaller seeds, but I guess at this time, in this part of the world, that was the smallest seed, right? But once it's grown, it springs and becomes one of the largest plants and puts forth large branches, right? So, but let's go back to today's first readings. I'm going to offer a commentary, quick commentary on this. And it says, at the turn of year when kings go out on campaigns, David sent Joab along with his officers in the army of Israel, and he ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah. David, however, remained in Jerusalem. One evening, David rose from his siesta, and I love siestas, right? And strolled about the roof of the palace. From the roof, he saw a woman bathing, who's very beautiful. David had made inquiries about who's that woman. She is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, and a wife of Joab's armor bearer, Uriah the Hittite. Right. So let's break this down as we go. Because you know, David's sin here, of course, is adultery. Right. But that's not why he sinned altogether. Yes, there was a lust. There's the envy against Uriah. He wanted what Uriah had, right? But David's failure. I think people do desire things that other people have, and people do have the temptation for fornication. Yes, okay, but those are thoughts that everyone doesn't act on all the time. So there has to be some other mechanisms in place that really facilitate such a thing oftentimes. In David's case, he had people in his life who facilitated his sin. And so this is really, I would say, why or how it came to be. Because he had people in place who, when I be honest with him, tell me sin. He did not have friends in his life. Okay. And so the first people who David has in his life, there are a number of people. And if you are this type of person, and we all know somebody in our life in some sort of capacity, who's doing something crazy, you know, whether it's adultery, whether it's alcoholism or stealing or something, you know, we all abuse, just not a good person. We all know somebody in our life who is not on the way to heaven, clearly. All right. And the question is, like, who are you in their life? Like, are you the person in their life who tells them the truth? Or are you the person in their life who is complicit in what they're doing? I'll tell you, if you're complicit in what they're doing, the judgment is also on you on your judgment day. But if you're a person who admonishes them, and you're the person who's like the watchman, like it talks about in I think of the book of Ezekiel, you know, there's the watchman who actually warns people, you know, well, you'll have a reward for that, right? And you help them is good. They may not listen to you, but we all need somebody in our life who tells us the truth, who tells us that you shouldn't. But too often, I suppose, you know, and I know this amongst men, you know, men, we're horrible about this. You know, we'll be around the men. We're just sitting around talking, drinking. The lies that we're telling are crazy. But, you know, there's always, you know, that person in the group who's, you know, screwing around on his wife, you know, or just, you know, who's just a man whore, right? And are we the person in our friend group who, like, counsels that person? Maybe not in front of everybody, but like, hey, man, you have a good wife, man. Why are you doing this type of stuff? Like, you know, as men, we don't do that often enough. We're just complicit and we laugh, ha, 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 you know, because that's the man thing to do, you know. But, you know, you have to be the person in people's lives who leads them to Christ. You just have to be, you know, because that's love, right? You have to desire the best for the other person. But too often, you know, we worry about being judgmental or not being a not cool friend or something like that. And that's really what David had. And the first person he had in his life, right, you know, he made inquiries about the woman, right? Who did he inquire to, right? And so this person should have known something was up. Like, why is King David asking about this woman? Right. And so this person was complicit in some way. Not complicit in like in a crazy level, but there was something there that he could have followed up on, like, hey, why are you asking? You know, something like that. And then David then sent messengers. He sent messengers to Bathsheba. And they took her. So I don't know what took means here. I don't know if it means kidnapping, snatching up. I don't know what it means. But they were complicit in the action of bringing this married woman to David. And then when she came to him, he had relationship with her. Or her. That's on him. That's on her. She then returned to her house. But the woman had conceived and then sent information. So there's a person here who Bathsheba gave information to David to tell him that I'm with child. Right. So this looks to be a one-off. They had these relations one time and she conceived. She hadn't seen him since or something. She can't see him herself. And so she sends a messenger. So the messenger knows this information as well. So the messenger doesn't tell David, hey, man, you messed up. Maybe you want to, you know, somehow make amends to this. Go talk to Nathan, the prophet. Talk to Uriah. You know, David doesn't do any of that, right? So then David sends a message to Joab and says, send me Uriah the Hittite. Joab doesn't inquire, like, hey, why do you want to see my armor maker? No, he doesn't do that, right? So Joab sends him. And so Uriah and David's here. You know, David, I don't know what he's thinking, but he keeps getting Uriah drunk. He's feeding him. I don't know if he's thinking about killing him or something like that, but there's no way to tell him what's going through David's mind. But sometimes I think men in this situation, they want to try to find justification to do something bad to the person. Like, oh, man, I'm sleeping with this guy's wife. So let me somehow justify it. Let me see if I find out if this guy is a bad guy. Right. So sometimes that's what happens as well. So maybe that's what David's doing, trying to find justification to do evil and take Uriah out. And then the text says, the next morning, David wrote a letter to Joab, which he sent by Uriah. So he sends this letter to kill Uriah with Uriah to Joab. So he said, place Uriah up front where the fighting is fierce, then pull back and leave him to be struck down dead. And so maybe this is why David's grooming Uriah, right? Maybe this is why he's grooming him and he's having him over. Maybe he want to act like he's friends. So when he gives Uriah this letter to Joab, you know, Uriah doesn't think nothing of it. You know, David's my homie now. You know, he likes me. He feeds me. He gives me good drink. Doesn't know the guy's banging his wife, has his wife pregnant. All right. So, and this is really, I guess, the only innocent guy in the story, Uriah, if we're looking for villains. So, but here's another villain. So Joab gets the letter and then he assigns Uriah to the place where he knew defenders were going to be strong. And when the men of the city became a sortie against Joab, some officers of David's army fell, and among them, Uriah the Hittite died. So that's the story. All right. So yeah, David committed the sin of adultery. There's lust. There's envy here. That's why he does it. He doesn't have a good heart. But how he did it, it needed a mechanism. There needed to be people involved. And there were a lot of people who are complicit in what David did, who also are, because they're complicit, part of the sin. So again, the lesson today is what the liturgy teaches us, that we should truly desire peace for our neighbor. And if you ever get my book, it is The Liturgical Sense of the Readings at Mass. It breaks down things like this that we read at the daily Mass. And it inspires us, encourages us how to live the liturgical life. Like, take these lessons that the Mass is teaching us. See how the liturgy is exemplifying them and how the scriptures are exemplified through the liturgy. You get it anywhere you buy your books. If you hit that code, type in, hit that link up there or hit the link in the bottom, hit that QR code or link in the bottom. You'll go to St. Dominic's Media, type in the code I love the mass and get 30% off the book. Makes it almost free. But yeah, and this is what the liturgy is teaching us. Like, peace be with you. And this is a prayer that we give the person next to us, essentially. And the church teaches in the general structure missal that you just exchange it to the person nearest to you. Right? You don't walk around giving it to everyone, but it's a sign of peace, right? It's more for you than the other person. And it's a prayer. We're saying, Christ be with you. Peace be with you. So we should always desire the best for the other person. And we should be that person who wants to bring out the best in our neighbor, and our friends, and our family. So don't be the complicit person. Be the person that the liturgy is forming you to be. The person who brings peace into the life of those you love and to your neighbor. So that when the temptations and those things come, you'll be that person in their inner corner who's praying for them, who's desiring the good for them. And when you have knowledge of the evil that people are doing in your life, be that type of person who truly desires peace for them and admonish them and encourage them to do good. And let them know that they have the potential and the capacity to do good, right? They just have to desire it in their hearts. And this has been David L. Gray in the morning. I'll be back Monday. You guys have a great weekend. But until then and until next time, blessings and peace to you and to yours.
Yeah, wait, I want to do this.
Wake up, it's time to start your day. No better way than rolling with David L. Gray. Wake up, it's praise and morning prayer. Then news and reflections with David L. Gray. Your timeline. Wake up, come on, tap like sub and share.